American Auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock here has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
All right, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk here on 710 ESPN Seattle. 710sports.com. No Brock today. He's in Madison, Wisconsin. He'll join us in 45 minutes for the Blue 42. But in the meantime, quarterback Jake Heaps in with us. Jake, how are you, buddy?
I'm great, man.
Good to have you back.
I'm fired up to be back here. It's going to be fun.
Oh, good. Well, we had a lot of fun when you were in the last time. I think I can tell people, right, that you're going to be doing a little bit more work for us. Is that okay? Can I tell people that? I just did.
Yeah.
All right, Jake's going to be doing a little bit more work around here, so we're pretty excited to have him, and you may be able to see some more of his stuff soon at 710sports.com. Details to follow. We'll just leave that as a little radio tease.
Yeah, a little teaser.
Little tease for
yes.
people out there. Anyway, it's good to have Jake in. We got a lot of Seahawks and a lot of Huskies to talk about today. And we'll start Hawks. Have you heard this Colin Cowherd rant from yesterday? So, Colin, look, we love Colin. Let me just start by saying we love Colin on this show.
Like most people don't love and appreciate Colin the way we do.
I would say that's true, except for every intern we've ever had who says they want to be in this business because they want to be like Colin Cowherd.
Size? Not ideal.
Exactly. Like, I love Colin. I think he's a riot. I also take every single thing he says with a grain of salt.
You have to.
Because he's not in the trenches on anything. It's all big picture. It's all feel. There's not a lot of fact. He's not looking at video. That's the exact opposite of Colin, and that's okay.
Right.
You just have to remember, in any event. Last week, it was Russell Wilson is not held accountable and isn't a good quarterback and makes too many mistakes. The last couple of days since the game, Jake, I feel like the internets have been heavy with the "it's all Russell's fault" crowd.
100%. Yeah.
And so Cowherd decided to go in the complete opposite direction.
Are people out of their... I'm a Seattleite. This franchise is a zero burger. Russell Wilson, there's two players in the history of this organization. Steve Largent and Russell Wilson. You take them out and you get into like... Walter Jones was awesome, but he was a tackle.
All right, so he's not exactly high in the Seahawks organization. It's all Russell.
You owe him for what he's elevated the franchise net worth, for what he did to the city. You owe him. And I'm not a big believer in owing people stuff, because I think he's great anyway. You got to be kidding me. The only reason we know who Richard Sherman is because of Russell Wilson. You wouldn't have been on Sunday Night Football. You wouldn't have been in the playoffs. You wouldn't have been in Super Bowls. You wouldn't have been on TV. You would have been a Stanford corner playing for a bad football team. And Matt Flynn would have been your quarterback, and you would have been 6-10.
Ah, that's pretty funny.
Hey, think about that, though. Think about that.
Matt Flynn?
Matt Flynn.
Oh, I'm not thinking about that if I can help it. No way, man. The idea of Matt Flynn leading this program through everything they've been through, yeah, I don't think that would have gone the way it has with Russell.
A zero burger.
Yeah, so I'm not entirely sure with what exactly what he's saying here. Is the argument that Russell is this an argument against Richard Sherman and the Russell Wilson needs to be held accountable crowd, or is this an argument that look, Russell's the only good thing this franchise has going forward? Because I think I can buy the first part of it. I'm not accepting the second part. I don't agree with the critics who think Russell's at fault. And I don't agree with anybody who's saying this is a bad organization right now without Russell Wilson. I think it's just too early to be doing some autopsy right now where we're choosing sides. And I'm not going to accept the premise of the question.
Yeah, I think that the big thing that what he's getting at here is, look, I think it's really bold of him to sit here and say, you know, the team is nothing. They don't get any attention without Russell Wilson. I think he's a huge part of their success. No question about it. I don't think they win a Super Bowl without Russell Wilson. All right. And I don't think that they have the wild success that they do without Russell Wilson. There were other key pieces to that. But I think the biggest thing that he has a gripe with, and I fully 100% wholeheartedly agree with him, is that Russell has done everything he needs to do to earn the contract he wants, barring a horrible performance this season, not necessarily the team record. Because, guys, like I said last time when I came on the air, don't have high expectations for this team. Let it be a pleasant surprise.
Right.
Because this team is a young group that's trying to figure things out. There's new pieces. It's going to be interesting to see how it comes together. If Russell Wilson comes out and just has a horrendous season, then, okay, maybe there's a little bit of reservation. But that's the only case that Russell doesn't get this contract.
I don't know. I don't know that I'm fully there with you on that. As much as I love Ross, and I, you know, Brock and I were jumping up and down the day they drafted him. I mean, like, I've been in – this is the show that was called the High Church of Wilsonism because of our love and praise for Russell. I still think that this contract negotiation is going to be brutal.
Well, and I think so, too.
And I think there's a really strong argument to be made on the Seahawks side that, look, you've done everything to deserve a massive contract, and yet it may not be great business to sign a quarterback to the kind of contract that he's going to want. But it's not going to be because of his play, and it's not going to be because of the player he is. He's one of the greats, and
right.
And I don't know. I found you guys watched the game last night, right? You watched Thursday night game.
Yeah.
First of all, good Thursday night game.
Yeah.
Like, good
solid game.
That was a fun game.
Not
to
a
watch.
Ton of penalties.
Yeah.
Not sloppy.
Like, it was actually a good game, and it was a game that I wasn't even excited about based on the matchup. Like, ugh, boring Bengals, boring Raven, and then like I watched the game. I was like,
yeah.
This is pretty fun. Alex Collins crushing people. Yeah, go Alex Collins.
There,
that's my guy.
There it is.
Alex
Someone
Collins.
Can feel good about himself.
That's
we
my
got
guy.
A little crush over here.
All right.
Oh, now
always
I get it.
Long crush on Alex Collins since the college days. But as I'm watching it, there's a bunch of throws Joe Flacco made where he's just sort of like quick hit, you know, quick snap, throws it up the sideline to some guy running a go route, and he misses the guy by like 10 yards on 3rd and 7. And I just found myself thinking, all right, what's the one thing everybody keeps criticizing Russell? Oh, he doesn't get rid of the ball quick enough.
Right.
Is that what you're looking for? You think every time a quarterback gets rid of the ball quickly, it's fine? It's not. It's not always fine just
no,
because he gets rid of the ball quick.
As a quarterback, I think the thing that you want to see, I think, in terms of Russell's development is, okay, become that guy that has great anticipation. But the thing is in Russell's game, he's different from a lot of these guys. He's got an elite arm. He has the ability to extend plays. So he doesn't necessarily need to rely on being this guy that's all about anticipation, right? I think there's times where it shows up that he can get better in those areas, no question about it. Mm-hmm. But like your point in Flacco, when you're in that situation, because I was that type of quarterback, I relied on anticipation. Sometimes you're throwing balls expecting guys to win, and you're releasing that ball before you want to, and it's a trust. And sometimes it doesn't work out the way you want it.
Yeah, you saw it last night. Sometimes it's the touchdown pass that he threw to John Brown, which was a great throw and
right.
a great catch in the corner of the end zone. Awesome play. And sometimes, and there were a few of them, it's just gunning it deep down the sideline, and the receiver's nowhere close to the ball. And
right.
So, I don't know, I found myself thinking more about that Mark Schlereth cut we played. Remember, Mark did the game on Sunday, and when he looked at it, he wasn't blaming Russell Wilson for anything. It was the type of plays that were being called, even in the passing game for him.
He only ran it 16 times. Two, you set up no boot keep action game at all. You did not get your quarterback outside the pocket ever designed. So you didn't put a threat on that defense, a run pass option threat ever. Not one time in that game. The one time you half rolled out, you threw a 51 yard touchdown to Lockett. It was an exceptional route, but you got him away from all that pressure and you threw it. You did that one time. So, you know, it's don't point the finger, pull the thumb. That's on you as a coaching staff. Now, if you want to rip him in team meeting, I'm all for it. But I'm like, if you want to point the finger, you know, point it at yourself and say, we have to do a better job coaching.
Yeah, I mean, this is one that I fully agree with in terms of, look, the second time he got out of the pocket, he threw a touchdown to Brandon Marshall, right? That wasn't designed, but, you know, him scrambling and making a nice play. I think overall, when you're looking at a team that you're facing in the Denver Broncos, this was one of the best pass rushing units in the NFL. And you're relying on an offensive line that's been shaky. It's, you know, you've got new pieces in there, and you're expecting Russell Wilson to step up in the pocket, not just sit in the pocket, but step up in the pocket, trust it. And he tried to do that a couple of times, and Von Miller smokes him, right? And there were other times where you give the line credit. They did a good job.
So you're talking about the play. He steps up into the pocket. Von Miller comes up and hits him.
Yep,
that's going to make you think again. Like, I don't know whether I'm stepping up again.
Right. It leads you as a quarterback to kind of question it. And I saw Russell as I'm studying the tape. He tried to continue to do it. So I give him credit for that. The other thing that sucks about that play is that he had a Tyler Lockett that was going to be wide open for a touchdown. And so, you know, that's part of it. So I think when you look at this and you look at the unit, you look at the strength of their defense versus your offense, what are some ways that you can help Russell be successful? And it's not saying that he can't throw it from the pocket, but you're looking at a unit that's one of the best in the league. And there's still a lot of question marks, you know?
He's Jake Heaps. He's in for Brock today at 7:10. It's time for Need to Know.
Need to Know, the voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
All right, well, first things first, with an injury report coming out yesterday that leaves the Seahawks pretty thin at linebacker. Once again, likely to have no KJ Wright, and Bobby Wagner's name actually shows up on that injury report. Seahawks agreed to a one-year contract with linebacker Michael Kendricks. He was released by the Browns in August after he was charged with insider trading. He is supposed to be sentenced in January for that. Look, I actually think this is a really good deal. I love it. They got a serious need for linebacker depth. He's a good player and a nonviolent criminal. That's rare. Rare to find these days. So if you can get a veteran linebacker for the Seahawks in a place where they have very little experience, a banged-up linebacking core already, I think this is exactly what this team needs.
I think they're desperate. You know, this is a move that when you watch the last game, the other guys that went in to replace KJ Wright, it wasn't pretty, Salk. It was not pretty at all. And so you're looking at a group that's desperate, saying, hey, we need someone to fill in this position, and they're getting a pretty good player in Kendrick. So I think this is a good move for him.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
All right, not to be lost here, the number 10 ranked Huskies are traveling to Utah for what's an incredibly difficult road test against a 2-0 Utah squad. That'll be tomorrow night on ESPN. Huge game with major implications. The Huskies just find themselves now in a spot where every game is must-win, but especially games like this. Not necessarily Stanford, not necessarily the absolute class of the Pac-12, but that next group right underneath. I think we'll say the same thing against Oregon, definitely here against Utah. These are the games that set them apart. And when you are ranked number 6 to start the year, find yourself still in the top 10, you got to find a way to go on the road in a really difficult start to your year and beat a quality football team. Now, I don't think Utah's as good as everybody's. Like, Brock makes them out to be like the second coming of Alabama a couple years ago. Like, let's calm down. I know Utah's a tough place to play. But Huskies got to get on track, and that means that Jake Browning needs to be better. It means their running game needs to be better, and they got to find a way to win a hard game on the road.
Absolutely. This is going to be a dogfight. This is a huge game for them. You look at the last 2 years, 2017, UW 33, Utah 30, UW 31 in 2016, Utah 24. This is going to be a dogfight. This is two programs that look exactly the same. They're very similar in terms of the way they're coached. This is a huge one that the Huskies have to step up to on ESPN on Saturday night.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Mariners beat the Angels 8-2 last night, game one of the weekend series in Anaheim. All right, I'll try to give it a little personality. Mike Leake allowed one run in 7 innings. Nelson Cruz belted his 36th home run of the season, one of the great individual accomplishments this year. Unfortunately, too little, too late, as this September was supposed to matter, and unfortunately, it really doesn't, and that's just incredibly difficult considering where this team was just a couple of months ago. I'm, as I said, waiting until the official elimination before giving a official take on the end of this Mariners season and where they go from here. Jerry Dipoto yesterday, though, saying they had some really hard decisions to make about the future of this club, and he was on with Danny David Moore for his weekly visit, and he's right. There are a lot of really difficult decisions, and there's a lot of really difficult spots that they've put themselves in by just simply not having enough talent. Not enough talent at the major league club, not enough talent in the minor leagues, and just not enough forward momentum to make easy decisions about the direction for their future.
Salk, I'm a little frustrated. You look at a 7-2 win, and I'm annoyed, right? With every win that they have, I'm just annoyed because it doesn't matter at this point. And, you know, to me, this was a group that I think everybody felt really good about. We were excited about the direction of where this team was headed, and then they just kind of imploded. And, it's just annoying.
There you go. It's very annoying, that's for sure. It's three things you need to know every single day at 7:10. Jake Heaps, you know him, the quarterback, of course, been around, grew up at Skyline, went to BYU in Kansas and Miami, and now finds himself, had worked a little bit with the Seahawks and the Jets, and now here around town. We're happy to have him in. He'll be doing a lot with us over the course of this football season. You mentioned Utah, and coming up here in about, 15 minutes, we're going to get your three keys to a Husky victory. What kind of coach is Kyle Whittingham? Did you get to know him while you were down there at all? He wasn't there yet, right?
You know, yeah, no, he was still there. I mean, I didn't get a chance to really get to know him, but just being able to prepare for them and get to understand what he's all about. I mean, this is a coach that really preaches toughness. Mm-hmm. And when you play a Utah team, you better be ready to put your work hat on and go to battle, because their defense is going to play hard. They've always been stingy. They always play hard. They're always a disciplined group. And I'm looking at this defense this year, and it's going to be one of their best units. And
you've played in that building?
Yeah, I played there my true freshman year, and it was a great environment. When I was at BYU, we were leading a 2-minute end of the game comeback, and block kick.
Oh no!
Block
that's
kick.
Devastating.
It was a heartbreaker.
All right. Well, is that on you? Do we still put that on the quarterback? Do you put it on yourself?
It was an interesting one because I was driving down. It was actually one of my best moments as a quarterback when I was there going, I think it was like 5 for 6.
Robbed from you.
Yeah, it was hard.
All right, let's talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. And the price is only going to go up.
Every morning at 7:15.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus. A wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
How are we doing today?
It's off to a bad start.
Perfect.
When the paper doesn't get delivered.
What?
Yeah, nobody delivered my Seattle Times or my USA Today.
Oh, my God. How are you going to read?
My wife can't.
Oh, my God.
Brutal. So it's like, how bad is that?
Tough morning. All right, yeah. Let's see what the Seahawks are doing. Hopefully you still know, despite not having the paper, that they signed Michael Kendricks, linebacker, yesterday. 1-year deal. He is he's had a little issue with the whole insider trading thing, which is a federal offense. Where are we at with Michael Kendricks?
Interesting signing, because I think you can see there's a need at linebacker, and he's clearly the best linebacker on the street. Now, again, how long he's going to be available, I guess when his trial's now going to be coming up on January 14th, I think it is, there's a decent chance he's going to be able to play this year. We'll see what the commissioner says, but I think it's a good signing because, I mean, you get a guy that is a very good outside linebacker, I think could help this team. Mm. I think he can learn things very quickly. And it just gives more depth and more options because you saw last week, I mean, they're going with Calitro and they're going with Griffin and all that. And even though, an injury here or there could play in, but I think it's a good signing.
Is he able to play this weekend? Like, first of all, is he cleared by the league to play this weekend?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then can you come in for a day of a walkthrough and then play on Sunday in Chicago?
I mean, I guess if you're Earl Thomas and you can do it if you know the system, I would have to think it's going to be unlikely he can do some things. I mean, because again, he won't even get a playbook until sometime today and get the tablets and all those things.
Is that a position where you can just go out there and play and just run into people?
To a certain degree, yeah. And I think he's smart enough to be able to do that. But, I mean, maybe it's just going to be spot duty, emergency duty, or anything else. But my guess would be he's going to be – well, and I guess the advantage is that now the game's one day later because it's
right.
going to be –
I guess that's true. It's not until Monday, so it's a little extra time. Yeah, so maybe he could play. And they could probably use him just based on the injury report. Just run me through the injuries and what we're looking at. We got Wagner and Fluker and Wright and Baldwin, Flowers. There's a lot of guys on that list.
Yeah, we don't know about Bobby Wagner's groin injury. That kind of came out of the blue, and that's certainly very concerning because they just can't stand to have another lost linebacker or defensive player of a top end. I have to figure it's – I mean, even though he's run the last couple of days, he's still an outside shot to K.J. Wright's probably not going to be able to play. That might be still much to ask. And DJ Fluker with the hamstring, probably no. I think, for the most part, everybody else would seem to be in pretty good shape as far as that. But again, the Bobby Wagner injury is a new one to kind of worry about.
Which guy on the injury report do you think affects this team the most?
Well, Bobby Wagner, if he's going to be injured, because now you're taking away, all the experience at the linebacker position if KJ can't go. Mm. And that's going to be a major problem. Bobby Wagner is so important for communication, for leadership, getting everybody set in the right spot. And, that would be good. But again, we don't know the severity of that one.
Man, I really want to see DJ Fluker play. And I know he's not the greatest player in the world, but I just want to see what this offensive line looks like the way it's meant to be with a big, gigantic human playing right guard.
Yeah, well, I think you'll see that in the first home game against the Dallas.
So you don't think he'll play Monday night?
I don't
night?
Think so, no.
Ah, what a bummer.
Because I think that that was the one thing that I know Russell Wilson was happy about. There was so much continuity on the offensive line, mm-hmm. particularly when Fluker was in there and Effetti was in there at right tackle. And so you want to see that because, again, they need to run the football. I mean, you can't go another game where you only have 15 carries.
Hey, how about the Hall of Fame, John? This is your bailiwick here. We got 2019 nominees and a couple of local names here. Holmgren, Alexander, Hutchinson. What are the chances looking like?
As we saw last year, I thought it was pretty close for Steve Hutchinson and Kevin Mawai. Both of those guys, I think, have a decent chance to get in. Now, when you start to put the Ed Reeds and a few first-timers in, that limits the number of spots for guys that can get in. But, I think that at some point here in the next two or three years, one of the former Seahawks offensive lineman, whether it's Hutchinson or Mawai, is going to get in. And once one gets in, within the next year, I think the other gets in. Mm-hmm. As far as a coach, it's as sad to say, but coaches have a very difficult time to make it when they're going up against players. Sean Alexander, probably a no. Because again, he hasn't been able to make the 15. But with the vote of the 102 that had been given out yesterday, we'll pare it down to 25 in the next month, and then eventually by late December, we'll get it down to 15.
Hey, pretty good game last night. What'd you think?
It was, yeah. But I thought the Bengals really played well. I thought that Joe Flacco looked really horrible in the first half. His throws were off, and they really didn't have any consistency. A.J. Green was an absolute beast. Looking great out there. All of a sudden, the Bengal team that had that five-year playoff run and then has been completely flat the last couple of years, there's a little bit of vitality there. They may be in the mix.
John, do you think this Bengals team's for real after two games?
I'm not totally buying in yet because, again, I don't know if they have the depth. But I think they're going in the right direction, because where they went in the wrong direction a couple years ago when they chased away and let two of their three top receivers go, particularly Mohamed Sanu and Marvin Jones, they let them go in free agency. Then they come back the next year and they get rid of their top their best two offensive linemen, Andrew Whitworth and Kevin Zeitler. That set them back. And then they drafted two offensive linemen in 2005, and they were terrible. One was the first round pick was inactive on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And so they set the franchise and the offense back. But now I think that you see with the Cordy Glenn trade, getting Brian Price before his injury at the center position, they're building some things back and looking a little bit better.
Do you think they'll be just good enough to make the playoffs and lose in the first round? That would be weird.
Never seen that from the Bengals before. That would only be the eighth time that would have happened.
All right, John, let's hit you with a wild card.
Time now for the wild card. What
wild card? Mr. Professor Clayton.
Yes. Is that going to give me my paper, by the way?
Yeah. Well, it's time for not Fan Fiction Friday because Howdy's out, so you just get a regular wild card today. If you were, in fact, your own paper boy, what type of vehicle would you use? Would you be a walker? Would you bike? Would you take your car? And then also, how would you ensure that everyone's paper always gets delivered?
Well, of course, I wish mine would get here because I'm 0-2, which is terrible for my wife. I would have probably just a nice little car. Because, again, when I was in college, I used to deliver papers. Not necessarily the main newspaper, but I delivered magazines. And so... At that time it was either a Honda Accord or it was going to be a small Toyota, and I'd go around like that, because the one thing that I think needs to be done now is that I'm not going to be throwing it out of the car.
No.
I'm going to be delivering it to the door, and so
service.
Yeah, well, that's what
white glove service.
That's amazing.
Those magazines.
John.
Yeah, absolutely.
Roll.
It's a lost art.
Yeah. I delivered a paper skid. Did you?
No, I did not.
Oh man, that was a fun job. Used to walk the neighborhood with my big Boston Globe oversized canvas bag over my shoulder, bringing the papers up to everybody in the block. Oh, yeah. That was fun gig.
I wish somebody would take that fun gig and get me papers today.
John, have a good weekend, man. Enjoy the game. Enjoy Chicago on Monday, and we'll talk to you later.
All right, sounds good.
All right, there you go. There's John Clayton, of course, with us every single morning at 7:15, even on days when he doesn't have a paper. I hope he makes it through the day. Sounds like a rough start. You can hear the show in the 710 Sports app. It is driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. A lot of conversation about the Seahawks today, of course, with Jake Heapson, but I want to take advantage of some of his college knowledge. So, Jake, coming up next, I want three things the Huskies need to do to go on the road in Utah and win, not just win, but win convincingly, because that matters in college football. We'll do that together.
I'm ready for you.
Next, here on Brock and Salk.
This hour of the Brock and Salk Show is brought to you by Mazda of Everett.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
Jay keeps in for Brock this morning, but I promise we'll be talking to Brock here in about 15 for Coors Light's Blue 42. He's in Madison. He's got Wisconsin. Who are they playing against, Kyle? I kind of forget.
BYU?
Oh, right, against BYU. Sorry about that. BYU at Wisconsin.
Jeez, dude.
I know, and I'm sitting here with a former BYU quarterback. I'm sorry about that. Honestly, I forgot. I was
Come
not,
on, man.
It wasn't a shot. I literally did forget.
Madison's a great town. That's a good place to visit.
That's what I've heard. And Brock always tells me that I would like Madison in particular. So yes. That's where he is. We'll talk to him here in about 15 minutes. Obviously, a lot of Seahawks conversation today. Got a couple questions for you guys to get you all out on the phones and joining in here with the conversation. But since the Huskies have a huge one tomorrow at Utah, and we've got Jake Heaps here in the building, we thought we'd find out what they need to do to win this game. So, Jake, give me three keys to not just a Husky victory, but a
convincing
Husky victory, one that shows everyone that they're a top 10, maybe even top 5 team.
Right, and this is a huge test for them, and this is a great opportunity to show just that, that they are a top 10 football team. The very first thing that they have to do is they need to run the ball more. They have to get it in Gaskins, Ahmed, and Chico McClatcher's hands more often. Those are your three dynamic playmakers that can really open this thing up and make it tough on this defense. It's going to be a challenge because this Utah defense is really good. Their front seven is very stingy. I think that's the thing that we want to see is we want to see a commitment to the run game. If they can get that going, they will be able to have their way because that opens up the play action game. It puts Jake Browning in a better position, not as much pressure on him, and they're able to control the football game. The second thing is defense. The defense has to maintain gap control when bringing pressure. There were too many times in our last game against North Dakota when they brought a lot of pressure. They were bringing safeties, they were bringing guys, but they gashed them. North Dakota gashed them on those plays because they didn't maintain their gap responsibilities, and you can't do that versus this Utah team. They're not an elite offense, but they have guys that can make you pay. Their quarterback's a guy that can make you pay. He's got great athletic ability. They've got a couple dynamic weapons. You have to be on your A game in terms of assignments, sound responsibilities. And the third and final thing is this is a huge opportunity for Jake Browning to make a statement. He's had a lot of critics. He's had just an unbelievable amount of criticism against him this week. It's been fascinating to see. People calling for the backup quarterback. I just don't see it. I'm sorry, guys. I don't see it. Everybody needs to chill. But this is an opportunity for Jake Browning to come in there, play clean, play efficient. He can't have the turnovers that he's had in these two games.
There you go. Three things from Jake Heaps that the Huskies need to do to win and win convincingly. Let me just ask you a question or two on these. When you say run the ball more,
right?
Okay, fine. Is there a specific style? I mean, getting the ball to McClatcher is going to be a little different than getting the ball to Gaskin. So
right.
Are there types of things you want to see them do in the run game?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you've looked in the past, I think Chico McClatcher, he adds such a different dynamic. So, you know, some fly sweeps, Gaskins and Ahmed.
Inside the 20 or maybe between the 20s?
I think between the 20s. Yeah. I think, you
I
know,
really
to get
hated the fly sweep inside the 20 line
right,
a couple
right.
weeks ago.
You know, and I don't think those are calls that you want to make down the red zone. You want to attack the defense more when you're down in the red zone. But when you open the game, let's get these guys the ball. Let's get your playmakers the ball. And I think it's taken a little bit more time through the game than we would like to see Gaskins, Ahmed, and McClatcher touch the ball.
Yeah.
I think those three guys need to touch the ball early.
You know, the other one is just on Jake. And you know, I'm probably in that camp of – and it's not because of this year.
Yeah.
It's been building. And in the offseason, you know, we talked to Coach Peterson and asked him, like, hey – is there going to be a competition? That's what we have that heck yeah cut from, right? We said, Coach, there's going to be a competition at quarterback. Heck yeah, there is, right? I mean, unfortunately, I don't know whether either of the freshmen was really ready to step up and have that level of competition yet. Obviously, you know.
Heck yeah.
Thank you, Coach. Appreciate it. You know, sir, the other kid's not going to be ready from Jordan.
Look,
I'm blanking on his name.
Yeah,
Jacob Eason. And so it really just comes. There's too many Jakes. It's hard to keep it all straight.
right.
It just comes down to Jacob Hayner, and he's looked great in practice. He's looked great when he came in the North Dakota game.
Yeah, but Salk, I mean, I'm telling you, man, when you look at this, I've seen him in practice. I've seen him in spring. I've seen him in training camp. He looks great. He's confident. I like it. But in terms of actually stepping on the field and playing a football game, you're talking about a guy who's won 40 games. He's broken records. I'm not saying that he's not susceptible. He doesn't need to be held accountable. But when you're talking about, is this guy going to, is the replacement going to be an upgrade? The answer is no. He's not going to be an upgrade to Jake Browning. And what he did, I watched the game. He made a couple sweet passes. He was 7 for 7. Well, guess what?
Why do you want to keep the kid making sweet passes off the field? Let him play. Free Hayner.
In garbage time. All right. I think we just have to do a better job of not overreacting,
right,
in my opinion.
All right. Fair enough. All right. Fair enough. Jake Browning, of course, going to get the start, likely to play the whole way, but I'll keep my eye on that because if he doesn't have a good game, those calls are going to continue to get louder and louder.
Absolutely,
I think,
they will.
This one. All right. Jake Heaps is in. It's Brock and Salk here in 710 ESPN Seattle. You mentioned holding people accountable, and I just want to spend a moment or two here on this Jason Gesser story out of Washington State University. So Jason Gesser, accused of sexual impropriety by multiple women at Washington State. He'd been doing color commentary on the radio for the last few years. He was replaced this year by Alex Brink and is still an assistant AD for fundraising, essentially, at Wazoo. If you read through the article, as reported by the Evergreen there, there's accusations of sleeping with an intern, trying to kiss a coworker, using university funds to fly in a girl, a girlfriend, some other things in there. And according to the investigation, it sounds like it didn't rise to the level of harassment. They're calling it impropriety, not harassment. But that could also be because victims or more victims haven't testified or come forward here in this situation. I just want to say a couple of quick things on this, and we're not going to spend all day. But one, what an unbelievable article by a student newspaper.
Yeah.
It is well-researched, well-written, an incredible job done by those two kids there at Washington State.
You don't see that
very
often.
That is really, really impressive, and congratulations to them. Number two, guys, stop being sleazy. Just stop. Whether it's harassment or whether this is impropriety, just stop being sleazy in the workplace. It doesn't pay, and it's on all likelihood going to make you pay when it's all said and done. Mm-hmm. But I have said, and I'll say this again, and you've probably seen some of this with athletes. The group of people that I think are the most at risk for some of this, for the harassment and impropriety in the workplace, beyond the crazy, powerful Les Moonves types, the next group I fear for are ex-athletes, because they go through this time when they are, the cream of the crop, whether they're coming up in baseball or football or whatever, and for whatever reason, women are throwing themselves at them, and they begin to believe that that is the norm. That's the way life is.
Yeah.
And I think that's wrong. I don't think that's the way life is. I think they're in a very weird spot, and you've probably seen a whole lot of it.
Yes.
And then they're done, and they find themselves in what is an actual workplace, mm-hmm. whether they're a broadcaster or a coach or working in the insurance business. And the workplace changes. The workplace that they knew that after work, everybody went out and there were just girls around who were desperate to be around you. That's gone away, and a lot of the things that they quote unquote could get away with, and I'm not saying they should, but they did, those change all of a sudden when you find yourself in the workplace. And so, it doesn't surprise me when I hear stories like this. It doesn't make it okay. And I'll go one better on Jason Gesser, because he then wrote an op-ed that came out last night, mm-hmm. claiming his innocence on this. He better hope that's true.
Yeah.
He better really hope that op-ed doesn't cause more people to come out and tell stories, because the rumors are on this that this is just the tip of the iceberg. And if he thinks that writing something like, oh, I'm innocent, you better hope that somebody else isn't out there and says, oh, you are?
Right.
Oh, you know what? I haven't told my story yet. Let me tell this one, because that'll only get uglier for him.
For sure. And you open yourself up to a big challenge. And I think the university and everything to this point has tried to protect him. I was fascinated to see what he would do, if he would come out and claim his innocence, or if he would just kind of ride this low key. And he came out to claim his innocence.
Wants to fight it.
And you know what? I hope that he's right. If he isn't, like you said, he just opened a whole different can of worms. And here's the thing. I think as athletes, when we go through this situation, at some point you start thinking you're above the system. You start thinking you're above everybody else, that you can get away with certain things because of who you are, what you've done, and it gives you this unhealthy sense of false pride, this unhealthy sense of I can do what I want anytime and I'm not going to get caught for it, and if I do, or if I'm just going to get a little slap on the wrist because of who I am. And we have to be better than that. Absolutely have to be better than that.
Well said. Jake Heaps in today for Brock, but we are going to chat with Brock here in just a moment. Coors Light's Blue 42. Brock and Madison, a couple Husky questions, Seahawks questions, all next here on Brock and Salk.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, GU corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
All right, time for a little Coors Light's Blue 42 with Brock Heward. We'll do that here in just a moment. Hey, interesting conversation there on the Jason Gesser thing. And I see all your texts and comments and kind of everybody on all sides of this. Jake Heaps is in today. Let me just tell you, and these two things are not necessarily related, but one, I guess, kind of made me think of the other. As you guys know, we spent a lot of time here. Hi, Brock. You can jump in on this as well. Hi, buddy.
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome to the show from Madison. It's good to have you.
Yeah, good to be here.
All right. That was a very subtle good morning.
Yeah.
We're being very calm for a moment. A friend of mine actually sent this to me, and it's something for coaches out there. So if you're a high school coach or middle school coach in the area, it's a really cool thing that they're doing. It's called Coaching with Courage, and they got a workshop going on Tuesday night at Miller Community Center. Essentially, it's a workshop for coaches, dinner for athletes and the coaches. So each coach can bring, I think it's up to four or five of the athletes on their team. And a workshop on what it means to essentially coach with courage and teach kids, you know, some of the ways to live their life. And a lot of this is about the prevention of domestic violence. It's run through the Harborview Center for Sexual Assault and Traumatic Stress. And, you know, a lot of the thought process around this is if you can teach high school kids, middle school boys, et cetera, what it means to respect their peers and to respect women.
Have to start early.
Absolutely. So if you're interested, you can go to Seattle Coach Workshop. Just Google Seattle Coach Workshop, and I'll see if I can tweet something out a little bit later in the day. It's a really cool thing, and I'll actually even pay you a small amount to be there, so it's a free service. So we'll put that out a little bit later in the day. In the meantime, Jake Heaps is in, and we got three good football questions for Brock. Starting for this one, buddy, question number one. UW, we just heard Jake's three keys to the game. Give me your biggest.
Nice. The biggest for me is third downs. That whoever is going to win third downs, and we see this in the NFL an awful lot, this is going to feel like a quasi-NFL game Saturday night in Utah. Both teams want to establish the line of scrimmage. Both teams are not built upon simply playing on grass. Bush Hamden can open it up, and certainly Troy Taylor, the offensive coordinator that I know that Jake, I think, has some background with and,
yep.
And you know, has a lot of confidence in, does an excellent job, and is one of the very few coordinators that Kyle Whittingham has had back-to-back years. I want to say it's something like seven offensive coordinators in 9 years.
It's pretty amazing.
Staggering the amount of turnover, because Kyle Whittingham, the head coach, is a defensive guy, and he's hard. He's really hard on his offensive guys, but he's hard-edged, and he knows that winning the line of scrimmage is the biggest key. And if you're going to do that consistently, as the Seahawks learned yet again in Denver, and you can tie third down so many times to the Seahawks' success in really controlling the line of scrimmage, I think whoever wins third down, and their little QB, if you remember last year in Seattle, Tyler Huntley, was running all over the place. They'd get to third and five, and then he'd break contain. He'd make a play with his legs. He'd extend the play. He'd break down the zones with his arms. So I think third downs would be the single biggest key in Salt Lake City.
All right, Brock, here's the second question. Who do you think's been the biggest contributor to Wazoo's 2-0 start?
Yeah, it's been Tracy Clay as their defensive coordinator. He's a big old dude, and I think we talked about at the time of the hire, Salky, that this was a good hire. This is a guy that has done a whole lot with not having all the resources in the world, understanding along the way, you know, what it's going to take to play really sound football. I don't know why this week that word gimme is stuck with me, but that was a word that Coach Carroll, you know, had said to you and I, Mike, after that game on Monday, that they just gave up the Seahawks defense too many gimmies. And if you think back to the beginning of Mike Leach's era there at Wazoo and some of the losses to 1AA teams, that was like, oh my gosh, how are you giving that up? Where is the safety? What are you guys doing in coverage? You're just voiding this area and you're voiding that area, and you've seen none of that. You've not seen a gimme yet. And it's been Wyoming and San Jose State, so by no means powerhouse offenses. Eastern Washington will test that more, but I don't expect all of a sudden for them to give up a ton of explosive plays. Tracy Clay is the new D coordinator, comes from Minnesota. He knows what he's doing. He knows how to coach X's and O's, and his players aren't giving up the big play. And because of it, I think that's a big contributor to them being 2-0.
All right, question number three. All right, so the Seahawks signed Michael Kendricks, who, of course, has a little issue with insider trading. But other than that, he's been a really good player and inside linebacker in this league for quite some time. They need help, Brock. KJ Wright not going to play Monday. Bobby Wagner all of a sudden shows up in the injury report. Is it realistic for Kendricks to play on Monday night?
Oh, there's no question. Yeah, he's going to have to. He's going to have to ramp up here in a real hurry. And you mentioned the background that he has playing. I've told this story before of sitting in the QB room my rookie year with Glenn Foley and John Kitna, and we were all new to Mike Holmgren's system. Yet those guys could pick it up and absorb it so much easier. And I remember, you know, sitting after one meeting, and I said to Coach Shep, I said, "Hey, can you stick around for a second? I got a question for you." And I said, "Well, why am I not picking this up the same way? I feel like I am so far behind, other than being dumb. What is my challenge here?" And he said, "No, they've got so much background in the NFL that while they may not know the terminology, they know these protections. They know these calls. They know what these players are trying to do. And likewise, I think a Kendricks defensively will have to learn some of the new language. The biggest challenge is going to be the adjustments in-game and pre-snap. That will be the single biggest area of concern, I think, for the program. They'll keep it simple. They're already doing that with so many young people anyway up front and in the secondary. But it is Chicago, and Chicago is going to run spread and tempo and do some college-level things and movement. And so he's going to have to be thinking from the neck up. But I think he'll be able to do that just because of the background and the inventory he has in his head.
Going to have to. Not going to have much of a choice.
Yep. You need him.
It's Brock Huard, who is on location in Wisconsin, getting ready for BYU against Wisconsin on Saturday, tomorrow. Hey, settle this for us, Brock. So next thing we're going to ask the people here, we're going to open up the phone lines on this here for the 8 o'clock hour. No Doug Baldwin. Khalil Mack is going to be coming up against them. No DJ Fluker. Do you trust the offense or the defense more in this game against Chicago right now?
Oh, I trust the offense.
Okay. No, it's just simple. Oh, it's just easy. Not even a question mark for you.
Nope.
Not really. No, Dwayne Brown and Russell in particular, Brandon Marshall, your Will Dissly, the highest graded Pro Football Focus tight end week one in the NFL.
Dude, spare me with this. I'm sorry. We're not Russell. Buying this. We're not. Because we're done with them. We're done.
Russell's been in that environment. He beat them in overtime years ago in Chicago.
Oh, great game.
No, I think, yeah, in this one, I would trust the offense.
We're done with this Pro Football Focus thing, man. Ever since just this past weekend, they had Earl Thomas as the number one rated safety in the game and Trey Flowers as the worst ranked corner in the game. But in order to have those rankings, you need to assume that Flowers is at fault on that touchdown throw and not Earl Thomas. And how could they possibly know that?
Good question.
There's no way. And I'm not saying they're wrong, but there's no way to know that that was definitely Flowers' fault and not Earl's, or not, as Dave Wyman speculated, Justin Coleman.
It's not a perfect system.
That's a bad system, and that's the case. When one guy goes to number one and the other guy's the worst-ranked corner in the game, and you have no idea who's at fault for a touchdown throw against them, that doesn't make sense. That's not fair to either of those guys to then point that out, like, oh, hey, this guy's number one and this guy's dead last.
No. All I know that's is wrong. Who's number one. Okay. Who's number one?
That's all you care about.
That's all I know. All Uncle right. Will's number one.
I think Nelly is still number one. See you, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Later.
See you Monday morning. There's Brock Huard. He's at Wisconsin to take watch Wisco and BYU tomorrow. All right, Jake, you're here, thankfully. Jake Heaps is in with me, and you guys are going to join us. 206-421-3776. For Brock, this is a no-brainer. It's the offense that he feels more confident in. All right. Well, yeah. How about you guys? You feel more confident in the offense or the defense as they get ready to take on Khalil Mack, Mitch Trubisky, and the Chicago Bears on Saturday? We'll give you our thoughts. Take yours.
Bring your A game.
Here on Brock and Salk.